Welcome to Coastal Connection. I'm your host, Brian Russo. Coming up later in the program, we'll bring you the backstory on one of the most iconic spots on the Ocean City Boardwalk. And just ahead, we'll go out on the Choptank River to learn how focusing on a small area of our local waterways may be the key to solving our region's pollution problem. But first, the Maryland primary came and went this week, and we now know who the main contenders will be in November's general election. I sat down with Steve Green in the Maryland Coast Dispatch for a special edition of our monthly discussion, and we started with one of the biggest local upsets, the defeat of longstanding Eastern Shore Senator Richard Colburn, who lost by a substantial margin to veteran delegate Adelaide Eckhart. Green says he believes Colburn's alleged personal indiscretions were what led to his loss on Tuesday.
You know, I think that has to be considered one of the main reasons. You know, I think, too, that district boundaries were shifted quite a bit, you know, so I think that had a lot to do with it. But there's no question when your name is in the headlines or in the news for negative things over the course of a couple of years now, that resounds, you know, the fact the, you know, alleged marital indiscretions, you know, that were put out there and included in court documents that were released to the public as well. You know, that's not going to bode well for many people. That was a really fascinating district to watch because you had two very experienced politicians on the shore, two household names battling it out. I really thought it was going to come down to actually absentee ballots, but that was not the case. You know, the first couple precincts came in heavily towards Eckhart, and that held through.
And it was interesting, too, because Eckhart, you know, having this much experience and having as much experience as her opponent, Mr. Colburn, you would think that this would be sort of a this is what we've done sort of campaign. But on the contrary, it looked very much like the mayoral race in D.C. with Muriel Bowser sort of going after the integrity of Mayor Vincent Gray. Delegate Eckhart went after the integrity and the morals of Richard Colburn. And that was pretty much the tone of the campaign. But now as you look at it, Eckhart now will face Democrat Christopher Robinson, who ran against Colburn and lost by almost 20% in 2010. Do you think that Mr. Robinson is going to fare any better against a new opponent this time around?
No, I mean, completely prediction, but no. I think it was one of the, going into this, it was like, okay, whoever wins this primary is going to be the victor. You know, obviously, we still, you know, have to get the general election and everything. But yeah, history shows that she'll prevail.
You know, as you watched some of the more local elections, let's talk a little bit about big surprises. I know many of them were sort of too close to call when the polls closed and throughout election night. You know, many of them were going to come down to absentee ballots. Talk about some of those. I know many of them were Worcester County commissioners.
Sure, exactly. The ones that are too close to call as we sit here today are on the primary side, it's Worcester County Commissioners District 4, where there's three votes to separate the top two vote-getters, and Ted Elder and Catherine Danko-Lord, and then District 5, which is Ocean Pines seat. You know, there are 190 absentee ballots that will be counted the later part of this week that could shift that. You know, as you know, typically absentee ballots hold the trend that are seen at the polls. However, when you're talking about three votes and eight votes respectively separating a race, that's totally up for grabs. You know, what we did, though, learn on yesterday's primary was that the Sheriff Mason in Worcester County was reelected by a resounding majority, getting 82% of the vote. And we know that Jim Bunting, who is Northern Ocean Pines, he was elected to his second term by getting 63% of the vote. So the primary was very important here in that there were some races decided.
Going into this election, there was so much talk and so many stories written about whether or not there was going to be voter apathy, not only with the timing of this primary, but also with everything that's been going on in the political world. Most political analysts said that if 20%, you know, that might be sort of a ballpark guesstimation or maybe the greatest hope of getting 20% of the voting base out to the polls. As you look locally, you know, it looks like, at least in Worcester and Wicomico County, we hit that trend. Tell me about what you also saw sort of not only on the shore but statewide.
Sure. Yeah, the 20% figure was traditionally the figure that people kind of expect in primaries. And in Worcester and Wicomico, they nailed it with 20.21% each, which is amazing. But, you know, that's in Worcester at 6,400-some voters turning out of 31,790. It's kind of funny to say that they reached their goal of 20%, which is amazing. So one in five voters decided to come out Tuesday to vote. But it's just the way it goes. And you look back at recent history, the 2012 primary turnout was again around 20%. So that was when the primary was held in September. You know, then we go back to the last gubernatorial primary, which was, of course, 2010, 34% of the people turned out to vote in Worcester County. So if you're looking at apples to apples, you could say that the time frame did affect in that it was 14% less voter turnout to the last gubernatorial primary. You know, as we were driving around, we had staff writers in the field. It was that was the resounding consensus among everyone was, wow, it's so quiet. It's an amazing phenomenon when you really evaluate these primaries. They're so important, but they're just not viewed that way in the public's eye.
Sure. And you know what's interesting is you look locally. I mean, you can win an election on a hyper-local election, you know, with only a couple hundred votes. So, you know, energizing your base is literally knocking on the doors of your neighbors and the people that live on, you know, conjoining streets, so to speak. But, you know, as you look at some of the larger elections, there were a lot more landslides, a lot more resounding victories. Look at you know, Congressman Andy Harris, for instance, when you won his primary by a landslide. Let's talk about the gubernatorial races. First, the Eastern Shore is long time been resoundingly Republican in a very blue state. Many people were against having Lieutenant Governor Brown get the nomination or get the nod here and win this primary because they see Brown as a continuation of the O'Malley administration. As you look at the results, do you think that's going to help Hogan here on the shore as he starts going in into the final stretch of this campaign, the fact that Brown won and Brown is so easily attached to O'Malley in the minds of Eastern Shore voters?
Yes, absolutely. You know, I hate to, you know, again, it's a prediction here, but I think Hogan does stand a chance. You know, Hogan's from Prince George's County. That's the heart belt of really what traditionally decides Maryland elections is that Prince George's County, Baltimore City, Baltimore County, Anne Arundel County area. He has a chance, and plus he has his organization Change Maryland that does have quite a following. But Brown, I mean, he had such an easy time in that primary. That was really amazing to me. You know, he, of course, he did carry the shore as well. And then, for instance, on the Republican side, Hogan didn't carry Worcester County, which I think is interesting. He didn't carry Wicomico County. Craig carried Wicomico and Worcester County. Now, I think that doesn't really, it's not, I don't think, an indictment of Hogan. I think it's just that there was a preference there for another candidate. I think the people who voted for Craig on the shore are going to turn their votes to Hogan, not going to jump party lines to go the other way. But the, you know, the ongoing issue that we have here on the shore is that we're just outvoted. You know, we're outmanned, so to speak. You know, really does not matter with the shore, how the shore votes, just because of the shore numbers. It's a numbers game. The candidates know this. You know, O'Malley didn't carry the shore in either of his two elections, but easily got elected.
Yeah, let's highlight some of those numbers. 2010, every county on the Eastern Shore voted Republican. O'Malley still won by 15 points. When Governor Ehrlich, in his general election, 12% of Ehrlich's votes in 2010 when he ran against O'Malley came from the shore. He still lost. Of course, you know, we talked about the metrics. The shore is much more Republican than the rest of Maryland as a whole, but yet it doesn't seem that the shore vote really makes a difference because, as you said, it's a numbers game. So if Brown is elected and you look at sort of what's coming, you know, it's long been criticized by folks here on the shore that they don't feel that they have a voice. There's that voter apathy. If nothing really moves except sort of the names on the nameplate, so to speak, what do we have to look forward to in this state as far as this vast partisan divide that we're dealing with and progress moving forward?
Well, it's going to be a much of the status quo. You know, there's really not going to be a swift change if Brown's elected governor. I mean, I think a lot of the similar things will continue on. You know, Hogan has talked about slowing down the minimum wage increase, you know, which was passed by the legislature last year. Brown's obviously was for that. You know, of course, the thing about that we always have to remember is, even though there might be a Republican in the governor's mansion, we learned this with Ehrlich, that doesn't mean that the legislature is conservative or even Republican, you know, majority. When Ehrlich was in office those 4 years, it was basically a logjam. You know, he had in his mind what he wanted to see passed, but he couldn't get anything through the legislature because it's a primarily Democratic-minded body. And you have the two speakers of the House and the leader of the Senate are both Democrat that are extremely powerful. They're the most powerful men in Maryland, not the governor. I'm really fascinated by this Brown-Hogan matchup. It is kind of like the dream matchup, you know, because Hogan is definitely the guy who has the mass appeal that maybe we haven't had since Ehrlich was first elected.
But do you think that this race is going to ease any of the cynicism or the apathy, not just in voters on the Eastern Shore, but voters throughout the state, that whomever wins, nothing's really going to change?
No, it's not. You know, and that's got to be disconcerting to us Shore residents because, you know, we as media, you the same, we always encourage people to go out and vote. And it's hard to, it's almost like talking out once two different sides of your mouth. You know, please go out and vote. Every vote counts. Every vote's important. But the reality is that it does not really matter on the Shore. And it's a tough thing to swallow for all of us because, it's not what you learn in civics class growing up. And it's not something that we want our kids to learn, that your vote doesn't matter. But it's just the fact is it's trumped. We're trumped in numbers by the Western Shore, specifically those I-95 counties.
As you look at the general election now, I know journalists like you and I here on the Shore are really going to be watching the race between Senator Jim Mathias and Delegate Mike McDermott to take that state Senate seat. And I think it's going to be one of those races that are watched on both sides of the Chesapeake Bay Bridge. For you, what's the more interesting matchup? The gubernatorial matchup between Brown and Hogan or the Senate matchup between McDermott and Mathias?
Well, the Senate matchup's more interesting because, you know, we're a hyper-local organization and that's right in our backyard. And, you know, it's really going to be interesting. You know, Mathias in the last election really, Michael James came after him pretty hard. And Mathias really did go the high road. I expect McDermott to go even harder and much more negative. McDermott's going to paint Mathias as a liberal who's cozy with the established government and established leaders of the state. And Mathias has always stayed the high road, and he wants to rest on his laurels of his record. And I think that's all admirable. But we have a situation here where McDermott's going to come after him hard. And I think Mathias is going to have to probably mix it up a little bit with him because, when you're getting put on the ropes, not to jab back every now and again can be a risky political move.
We've been talking to Steve Green. He is the publisher and editor of the Maryland Coast Dispatch. Steve, thanks for joining me here on a special Maryland primary conversation.
Thank you, Brian. Appreciate it.
Quick break and we'll be right back. You're listening to Coastal Connection. You're on 88.3 in Ocean City and 88.5 in Washington. I'm Brian Russo.